Everybody, this is John from Church History for Chumps, and I'm right here with my pal,
Thomas Duell.
There we go.
My own intro music.
That was pretty good. Yeah. Can we afford intro music? Well, we have intro music.
Yeah, but we each need like our own intro song. Like, you know, there's intro music at the start of like a WWE
wrestling.
But then,
yeah.
Like, you know, we each have our own.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Or like walk-up music in MLB.
In baseball. Yeah. MLB. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds kind of fun. No. I'll talk to our editor and see what we can do. Can afford.
I don't know. I feel like we should mention this. I actually was just telling some people about this earlier today because someone started listening to the pod and they were like, this is insane production quality.
Yeah.
And I told them, I said, we actually have, and I'm not joking about this, we probably have one of the best podcast editors in the country who works on our podcast, and he works on really, really big projects, at least within like the he doesn't just do Christian podcasts, but
yeah,
he just happens
to
be an elder at your church.
Yeah, good buddy of mine.
And he actually, we should shout him out. His name is Ray, and he likes doing this sort of stuff for pay.
Mm-hmm.
We get a special deal because John's elder.
That's
but,
right.
Actually, if you have a podcast and you need some help making it sound not like you're living inside of a tin can, you should hit up our boy Ray.
Yeah.
Actually, shoot us a DM and we can get you in contact with him.
We'll get you in touch, yeah. Or if you maybe your mom owns a radio station out back by the farm, you know, WYSM, you know. So, you can hit us up. We'd love to get our boy Ray a little bit more business. Even though I hear he's pretty busy right now, so he might take a while.
I have a feeling that if Ray could work on podcast editing full-time, he'd like that to be his full-time job.
I don't know if that's true, but I don't know. Ray, why don't you edit in an answer?
That'd be awesome. I really hope
he's
to
like,
hear Ray on this.
Yeah. All right, Ray, do your thing.
I have a hard time saying no to more clients, and I go back and forth on whether or not I'd want to do this full time. But you never know. All right, guys, back to you.
How you doing, Tommy?
Doing good, man.
Yeah.
It's good to be back in the saddle. I just finished up my schoolwork, just finished up seminary, and that's why Annie was on recently. I don't know if that was the last podcast
it
in
was.
The order. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That was great. Thank you, Annie, for hopping in. It sounded so much better than my voice.
It's funny that she would say the opposite. She did the, you know, when you try to like listen to your voice, like she listens to the episode after it was released, and she was like, I can't do it. She got... Like
that's really interesting. She actually has like a really clear voice just in person, and it was only amplified like on the by the mic, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got a great voice
For
radio, right, and a face for TV.
Yeah, yeah. That's my wife there, pal.
Yeah.
So why don't you back off?
that was like a low level appropriate amount of what did you want me to say?
Look, it was low, but it wasn't appropriate. All
she
right?
sounded terrible.
All right, thank you. Yeah, talking about my wife. Ooh, yeah, good old voice. Oh, I love your face. Oh, okay,
jeez.
Weirdo.
Oh man. Okay,
all right,
moving on.
We'll take this off mic, Thomas. Hey, so we're getting back into heresies today, which I'm really excited about. I'm also excited because, you know, we've gotten into such weirdo brainiac heresies where it's like, oh, well, this was from the 4th century. And, you know, this one's about when people thought that Jesus was cool, but, you know, he was God, but he was God on Tuesdays, but not on Wednesdays, like all that brainy stuff. And now we get into the part of heresies that I think I really have a deep passion for. And this is just the weirdo wackadoodle stuff. The truly cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs heresies.
This could be anything at this point, man. I'm excited to find out.
It's true. So we're going to be talking today about Protestantism. No, we're going to be talking about the doctrine of the serpent seed, which kind of sounds like a sequel to like a Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Dungeons and Dragons, the serpent seed.
I mean, if we're going to talk about serpent seed, that kind of is what it's like. What Dungeons do you mean? And Dragons.
Oh, it, feel. Yeah, it is kind of. Yeah, 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 yeah. And so, yeah, the serpent seed theology, it's got an interesting relationship with the church. It's fortunately only really existed in the fringes. It was never considered mainstream, and it's kind of been universally dunked on wherever it existed. But that doesn't mean it hasn't been popular in certain circles, and it's kind of popcorned around different parts of history. And so the first place that we see the serpent seed theology is in this text called the Gospel of Philip, which you should know by now, listeners, that if it's a gospel, but it doesn't have the names Mark, Matthew, Luke, or John behind it, it's probably
Gnosticism.
Gnostic, yeah, which we talked about a couple weeks ago. So yeah, there were a lot of Gnostic gospels being thrown around, and what's interesting is they don't really have the same like literary or narrative flow that the gospels have. These gospels kind of read a lot more sermony, and I don't know, they're weird. It's not Gnostic stuff is weird. And so I'll read this excerpt because it'll give you a real quick idea of what we're going to talk about, and then we'll kind of unpack it some more. So this is from the Gospel of Philip, and it reads like this: "He who has been created is beautiful, but you would not find his son's noble creations. If he were not created but begotten, you would find that his seed was noble. But now he was created and begot. What nobility is this? First, adultery came into being, afterward, murder. And he was begotten in adultery, for he was the child of the serpent. So he became a murderer, he, meaning Cain, just like his father, and he killed his brother. Indeed, every act of sexual intercourse which has occurred between those unlike one another is adultery." So, essentially, the serpent seed doctrine is this very odd idea that in the very beginning, the great fall that existed, that happened in the book of Genesis with Adam and Eve, did not happen because of a serpent or because of a fruit that was eaten, but that whole story is cloaked in deep symbolism, and that when the serpent deceived Eve, he didn't deceive her into eating some like mystery fruits, but he slept with her, basically. And that not only did sin enter the world through a sexual experience with Satan himself, but that now you kind of have half the people of the world who were filled with this like satanic bloodline. So they would say that Cain, the reason that Cain killed Abel is because Cain was a child of Satan, and that the Canaanite lineage that comes from Cain and that exists in certain nationalities even today is satanic, basically, like subhuman in a sense. And it's interesting to read points where people are like arguing for it, because there's little things that you would look at and be like, huh? Because like when Jesus looks at the Pharisees and he calls them a brood of vipers, it's like, huh? And then when he says, you guys are like your father, the devil, and it's like, huh, you know, and that's the thing that happens with all of these heresies.
You can proof text your way to like some weird spots.
100%. But that's also, I mean, like heresies will make you look at the Bible differently, but not better and not like more comprehensively. You're just kind of like, I've never thought that someone could make that argument before. But
usually it's like there's something that's going wrong in the heresy, but sometimes there is something that someone's on that you haven't noticed before.
Right.
And like the flip side of the heretical coin is usually something pretty cool that just needs to be mined out.
Exactly.
Like something else is going on that you've noticed here. I mean, the Christological heresies all occurred because people were having a hard time wrapping their minds around the hypostatic union.
Yeah.
But the flip side of all the heretical coins is the doctrine of the Trinity, which is really incredible.
Exactly. And also kind of cloaked in mystery, which is kind of what led to all of this troubling speculation that happened. But yeah, so we have some reason to believe that before the fourth century, where the Gospel of Philip is from, they were teaching this because Irenaeus, who we've referenced a bunch of times because he wrote the classic text Against Heresies, where he talks about Marcionism and Gnosticism and a whole bunch of texts that we've talked about before on the show, he references this idea that some people out there think that Eve and the serpent slept with each other, and this is wrong. So there is a good likelihood that this viewpoint actually came from a very, very popular second century Gnostic Christian theologian by the name of Valentinus. And he was a very, very influential dude for kind of like syncretizing these Gnostic views into the Christian worldview. And
a guy named Valentinus came up with the idea that Eve and Satan had sex.
Yeah, man. It just shows that time is a circle.
The jokes just write themselves. Man.
Yeah, this is also going to be a struggle to keep this a fully PG show. I don't know.
I think I'm beyond that point.
I'm turning on my pastor brain and not my goofball internal child brain.
Man, yeah, I just forgot we've got people who are like, I like listening to this while I put my kids to bed.
And that's what I was I was like, gosh dang it, all right, well, I was even trying not to even use the S word at all, but I was like, that just came out. I was gonna say intimate a bunch of times, but
I mean, we could start doing a little thing in our tags or it's just like, if it, like, not bedtime approved, you know. Like, but in the description.
Yeah. This might be like TV 14 or something. Yeah. I don't know. So I'm sorry.
Your kid will survive.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's my fault. Real weird viewpoint. So we have reason to believe this kind of existed in pockets around the early church, most likely amongst some Gnostic views. And remember, as we talked about a few weeks ago, Gnosticism was far from a centralized view. It existed in a lot of varying ways, which means that some Gnostics believed some things and some Gnostics didn't. So we can't even say this was like a mainstream Gnostic belief. It's believed in the second and parts of the fourth century, and then it kind of dissolves, and then it pops back up in a very unexpected place, which is the 19th century in the United States. It's about to get rough. Around the 19th century, there's this dude by the name of C.A.L. Totten, and he develops this, I guess it's a doctrine, I guess it's a theology, called British Israelism, or British Israelism, which I think, Thomas, You might be a big fan of this. It's the idea that
hold on a second.
It's the idea that white people are the descendants of the biblical Israel, which, you know, there's a few. If I can get you a couple brewskis in,
I am,
bro,
super white.
I don't know. I've had a couple fireside chats with Tommy where he's like, you know what?
This is like, I have no recourse right now. You're just lying on the mic.
It's not true. Oh. I'm so sorry. You're just like
first you're
silence.
Like, first you say British Israel, and you're like, you're going to like this. I'm like, but why?
Get ready.
Okay.
All right. No, Thomas has never, he's never done that. He's never smoked weed on the show. All these things aren't true, I promise. It's I just think is maybe a more common thing that we know about today is, or at least maybe in my circles, because, you know, I'm half black, but Black Hebrew Israelite movement, which is a very fringe kind of Nation of Islam spinoff that would say that African Americans and people of color, specifically Native Americans, and I think Hispanics, are the true descendants of Israel. Well, this is like the other side of that, and I think actually preceded it, which, yeah, it's the view
that... Are you
that,
saying that black Hebrew Israelites culturally appropriated this from the British?
Even white people did that first. It's like the opposite of rock and roll, dude. Oh my god, that's crazy. It's like if Chuck Berry stole Elvis Presley's discography. Oh man, hey, that's funny. So yeah, that is it. And I found this really fun chart where they basically show all of the tribes of Israel, and then they show which nation that is today.
Does it include all of them? All the tribes? All modern nations?
All of these are currently modern nations. Yeah,
okay, so but it's not an exhaustive list. Like, if you're this nation, you're descended from.
Yeah, kind of, sorta. Okay. So, like, you got Denmark. Fits like a glove.
Is that really what it says?
No, I'm not lying. It's right in front of me, dude. Simeon, Spain. You know, they speak Spanish, but there's some fair skinned fellows out there. Judah, Germany. You know, Ephraim, Great Britain, which, I mean, you hear the word Ephraim and you think that's probably a British guy. Manasseh is the United States, which is the one that I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about that one. Benjamin is Iceland, which okay. I thought, yeah, okay. I'm glad. I think Iceland was probably just psyched to be included in this. Let's see. Naphtali is Norway. Zebulun is France. Issachar is Finland. Shout out to Finland. Asher is Sweden. Gad is Italy. Reuben is the Netherlands. I think that's all of them. Yeah.
So this is just dumb.
Yeah. It's just racism, you know. These are just dudes who are basically like, yeah, this is how we, like, the true Israel is just the white countries of America, or of the world, basically.
Yeah, the continent.
And so they've developed this view, which of course is extremely controversial. It's going to be called the Christian Identity Movement, because that's going to kind of subsume this idea of British Israelism and then co-opt it with our good friend the Serpent Seed, where they're gonna say, well, hey, it's not just that white people are derived from the native Israel, but it's also that other races are spawns of Satan. And so, dude, that's, I don't know, like,
I mean, it's pretty airtight case.
You're either with us or against us. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So a couple other dudes who kind of fell into that camp were Wesley Swift and Russell Kelso Carter.
You freaked me out for a second. You said Wesley.
John Wesley, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Read them and weep. Your hero Methodist is a fraud. So yeah, it's kind of this viewpoint that starts in the 19th century, continues to grow into the 20th century. And you know, as you can just imagine, and I'm not even trying to be like, you know, I'm not trying to be a goofball here, but, the 20th century did bring about a lot of, conversations around other races. So it did make sense that there were some extremes where there were people who were basically looking to co-opt their theology with their internal prejudices too. But I mean, it also led to in a completely reprehensible quote-unquote Christian view, which was that people of other ethnicities are subhuman and the seeds of Satan.
So in this view, is it possible for someone who is the seed of Satan to be saved?
See, they never really seem to say. It seems like it's more like it justifies believing that they're less than human. So then they look at it through the social lens and say, well, because they're not human, we should stay segregated as a country. You definitely shouldn't get behind interracial marriage. Like, it's kind of a justification for separation. But I haven't seen anyone who's like, oh yeah, they're destined to hell. But they're not either like, oh, we have to evangelize the savages, you know, the black people across the street.
Well, yeah, I'm reading about this guy, one of the proponents, a guy named Daniel Parker. I mean, I'm just shooting from the hip right now.
Yeah.
But it looks like he was against the idea of Christian missionaries because Whoa. Of the serpent seed doctrine.
That's crazy. Yeah, I didn't even... That's pretty intense. Yeah. That's yeah. like...
But I mean, it seems logically... Like consistent. Conclusive and consistent. Mm-hmm. That you're like, yeah, why even try?
Yeah, why bother? Honestly, it looks just like makes
he integrated the serpent seed doctrine with Calvinist predestination.
Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah, they even got
close
us.
Close to home. Yeah, yeah, even got us. Yeah. They, you know, as our boy Brad Mella would say, you can tell a tree by its fruit. Actually, that was probably Jesus, but Brad says it all the time. But there's some pretty nasty fruit that comes from a group like this. They were associated with this group called the Phineas Priesthood, which was basically just seemed like a terrorist organization, and they were responsible for some pretty gnarly hate crimes around the 60s. One more iteration of the serpent seed doctrine came through a very, very well-known preacher from the from post-World War II American era of revivalist preachers by the name of William Branham. And he was, you know, we talked about A.A. Adams, I don't know, geez, maybe like a year or so ago. Even A.A. Adams was definitely in the shadow of the massive icon that William Branham was. And he was, you know, this electrifying preacher. He preached a lot about end times, the return of Jesus. I guess he was big on predestination. He denied the existence of an eternal hell. I really didn't think annihilationism would find its way into that circle. But he was also a proponent of the serpent seed doctrine. And I've seen, it seems like scholars are very divided on William Branham about just how involved he was, not so much in this doctrine, but the really grimy dudes who were also teaching it. There are some who just say he was a straight up like white supremacist because he preached it, and some who I think were more like he had a lot of really gnarly associates. He definitely had some buddies who were legit associated with like the KKK. But if you listen to his sermon called The Serpent Seed, that you can actually listen to all 1 hour and 45 minutes of on YouTube today, he doesn't seem to use it as like other races are gross and you shouldn't talk to them or evangelize to them. He actually spends a good amount of time saying, if you believe that someone is less than you because of their skin color, that actually makes you the subhuman one, which is a solid thing to say. But he brought up this serpent seed idea, one, because he thought that the serpent was the missing link between chimpanzees and humans.
Okay.
Which is a really strange thing. But also because, like, he wouldn't have said that the sons of Satan today are like black people or Jews like others would. He would say that the sons of Satan are like the lukewarm Christians, or I think his exact words for it were a big religious bunch of illegitimate bastard children. So he would basically look at, I mean, and again, you got to think, this dude's teaching in the 40s and 50s. He's seeing kind of the cultural revolution that's starting to pick up in America. Like, he's looking at the hippies and the people who wear shorts and big jewelry to church, and he's like, yeah, you guys are the serpent, are the children of the serpent, not the races. And it makes sense that to him Cain was the first child of Satan, because when you look at the story of Cain, he sees someone who is two-faced, who brings false worship to God, who is angry, who commits violence against the true Son of God. So in his mind, like, that's who the child of Satan is today. It's the fake religious people.
When can we start picking this apart?
At any time. Actually, no, I'll say one more thing, which is that I have read a few things that seem to indicate that the lizard people conspiracy theory that like there are like subhuman mm-hmm. like lizard folk who like run the world, that was like a brainchild of this
dang
idea.
Because I kind
of
like that one.
I know you do, and that's why I saved that for last. Yeah. So here you go, man. Pastor it up.
Wow. So yeah, a lot of problems. Although. What's interesting, we were talking about like the two sides of the heretic coin. It seems like what people are trying to get at with this, if we're being like charitable towards the position and maybe thinking about those in history who weren't just trying to completely make up something stupid, but were trying to wrestle with what they actually saw going on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if it's not necessarily stemming from racism, but they're trying to wrestle with, we have two different types of people in the world, right? We've got those who are, well, I'm going to immediately start jumping to the covenantal language because it's like, that's the actual biblical answer to what we see going on in the world around us is you have, covenant kind of governing everything. Like you're in Christ or you're not. So what we see going on in Genesis 3 is speaking to headship, essentially. The part that I don't get, every point that this has come up in history, is how little exegesis is actually going on with even the surrounding texts in Genesis. Like the whole concept would be that Cain, right, is a seed of the serpent.
Yep.
Except the Bible literally tells us that he's the seed of Adam.
100%.
In fact, it even goes into graphic enough detail to tell us Adam and Eve slept together and Cain was conceived.
Yes.
So I kind of get lost at that point where it's like, man, we're just going to ignore stuff, I guess.
This is where like I, you know, because when you look at...
When it makes sense why a Gnostic in the first century and second century might be... not working with those texts in the authoritative manner, but by the time we get to the 19th,
like we should be doing better than that. Yeah, 100%. Well, because like in the Gnostic worldview, the worldview was the authority. The scriptures were meant to conform to a worldview they already understood.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
So it made sense that they could twist something around because like that was the scriptures had less authority than the story of Gnosticism that they already kind of had bought wholesale. The problem with that when you look at the 19th century is these dudes, I think, are pretty clearly just, I mean, and this is like a criticism I saw against William Branham, but you could apply to the whole movement. They're not theologically sound at all. Like these are terrible arguments, and it's very clear that they have compromised the means of biblical exegesis just to get to the end that they want to arrive at. And it's interesting because when you look at the xenophobia that you have when you are, you know, a straight up racist dude in the 19th century, but also like think of the sexual component of this literally shows that sex, like ill-conceived sex, was what brought sin into the whole world. Mm. And you think about the relationship that these old school kind of fundamentalist Christians had with sexuality. Mm. Like it makes sense that like, oh yeah, this is actually proving a lot of kind of biases I already held, and now it makes sense. Yeah. You know?
I see this as a really, I mean, I don't know anybody that holds to this theory now, although I just recently heard of a church in a neighboring state that has somebody on staff that's doing some sort of proponent of this idea. But it's a really good opportunity for the gospel because it's like the news is actually worse. You don't have to be a child of Satan to be damned. You actually just have to be a son of Adam. Like that'll get you just being a descendant of Adam and Eve. You're cooked. And that's where, like, I think it was Augustine doing his work on original sin kind of does some early reflection on, like, the reason why Jesus didn't have original sin is because he was not a son of Adam in that sense, right? Like, the seed is the spirit, there,
right?
That Eve or Eve, second Eve,
yeah.
conceives of, and so that's why like Jesus is able to defeat death on our behalf, because he's not a son of Adam in that sense. He doesn't. Mm. He isn't. He's fully human, but he's not like in Adam, like
yeah.
like we are.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's a really good opportunity to talk about the actual state of affairs.
Yeah. I love the point that you made. Yeah, that you don't have to be a son of Satan to be damned. You just have to be a son of Adam. Like, that's so good, because when you were mentioning the covenantal language before, like, I agree. The thing is, though, like, or not, I'm not disagreeing with you at all, but in the light of the covenant, the difference between a covenant person and a non-covenant person is not good person versus bad person. Mm-hmm. And I think like what's very telling about the people who adhered to this really fraudulent belief is that they were always on the winning side. And then the people that they disliked, not even particularly because they weren't Christian, but because they possessed something, whether it was an irreligious attitude or some group that they held prejudice towards, like it was always, I'm the person that God loves and this is the person that God doesn't love. And I think that we have a tendency to do that without this weirdo serpent seed theology. We have a tendency to kind of like otherize other people based on different kind of cultural values that we have. And you're right, like the gospel is the great, I think we've said this before, the gospel is the great equalizer, because if we're all equally damned under the sin of Adam, then we're all equally in need of that grace.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and the end goal is always the drawing in of the nation. So like one of the biblical categories for people is ethnos, which is like nations, basically like different family groups and cultures. And we see in the biblical story, you know, God choosing certain nations and not others, but the end goal is always the blessing and the drawing in of all of them.
Right.
You know, when God says, Jacob I have loved, Esau I have hated, it's not, what's going on there isn't just God being like flipping a cosmic coin over and over again to find out who's in and who's not, but there's an emphasis on, I'm going to like work through this family to draw in all of the families. It's God's, it's God's desire that all men should be saved.
Right, right. And yeah, I mean, that's great news.
Yep.
That's really helpful to know. One thing I did think of as I was going through this, it's just like, I mean, the bummer, and we've kind of talked about the whole 20th century revivalist movement and how these were dudes with a ton of personality and a ton of like preaching ability, but really not, like, I mean, even in like a classical sense, not educated, not seminary educated, like theology was always going to be kind of an issue in these areas, which is really unfortunate. Because I think that under, you know, some good teaching, they could have had some really powerful things to say to the country at that time. But like, it's just such a good reminder to me that novelty is often a red flag. And if something, and if we don't understand our history of what kind of like enticing but inherently dangerous views have kind of passed through the filter of Christianity over the years, like I heard a preacher a few months ago, and he's a pretty well-known preacher in the here in the States. He was basically kind of railing against the Catholic understanding of the Virgin Mary, and he was like, yeah, the Virgin Mary is not the mother of God. Like, she's the mother of the human side of Jesus, but not the divine side of Jesus.
Here we go,
which
again
is freaking Nestorianism. Yeah. Like, which is like, dude, how much do you have to like rally against
what,
the Catholics?
What pastor was this?
I didn't say.
I know who it is.
I think I meant
it's John MacArthur, wasn't it? Oh my gosh.
Here I was like, oh, I'm not gonna stir the pot. Oh. I'm not gonna say who it was. And Tommy's like, was it John MacArthur? Yeah, it was John MacArthur. But yeah, it's like, how much do you have to rally against Catholicism to end up falling face first into a 4th century heresy?
Yeah.
Like,
well, we better stop this boat
before it sinks. Yeah, well, hey.
I've got a lot of respect and thankfulness for John MacArthur. I just want to say that on the air.
No, dude, and I'll say too, like, I learned so much of, like, the Bible through John MacArthur. Like, I listened to so many of his sermons when I was in college. And even though I've definitely veered from some of his stances today, super grateful.
Yeah, and just in case it wasn't clear, John MacArthur is not a proponent of two-seed theology.
Right, but he might be of Nestorianism.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. All right, we love you guys. Yeah, I can't win them all. I love you guys. Thanks for sticking around. And hey, if you're ever thinking to yourself, maybe my neighbor is a child of Satan, we have a phone call. We have a phone number that you can call.
1-800... You're stupid.
I love starting a joke and then making you do the punchline. that was really good. All right, we're done. We're gonna wrap it up. Thanks, guys.
God bless you.
See you later.